We're this close to crowning an NBA champ. And with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code DKHOOPS. That's code DKHOOPS for new customers to get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500 if your first bet doesn't hit. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility, wagering, and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like,
whoa.
And,
hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Time, weather, and...
Always.
Even before I stepped foot on campus at the University of Notre Dame, I knew I wanted to work in sports broadcasting. My dad, Mike Storin, made a career in sports management, and I spent my childhood surrounded by players, games, and the business.
There's Bobby Jones! Jones dunks it in!
So Anna Lynn grew up in an atmosphere of professional sports, and that was simply a way of life. As she went to college, she said that she wanted to be a broadcast major, and her father, not unused to giving advice, said, oh no, you don't want to go into broadcasting. You need to major in something else. So she double majored, one for herself and she got one for me, and began her sports career, not as a fan, but as a on-air entertainer in her own right.
I had a double major in international government and broadcasting. While at Notre Dame, I got as much experience as possible, hosting a sports talk radio show, DJing at our campus radio station, and doing reports for our local South Bend TV station. In the summers, I interned at both TBS and a Houston TV station. By the time I graduated, I actually had a TV reel that reflected all that hard work. But there was just one problem. It was 1983. And sports broadcasting jobs just didn't exist for women, save for one or two that appeared on NFL telecasts.
After disappointing seasons in Dallas and New York, the Denver quarterback seems kind of revitalized with the Broncos.
Having grown up around sports, I knew it would be a lot more fun than, say, covering city council meetings. I was determined. I answered all the want ads in the back of Broadcasting Magazine, typing letters and mailing my tapes to TV stations around the country. Hundreds of them. I set aside the rejection letters that flooded my mailbox. And I managed to get a handful of interviews, but they inevitably led to more rejection. I was barely 21, living at home the summer after graduation. My dad and I used to go jogging together, and we would talk about my job search. On a run one day, he reminded me that it takes just one person to say yes. And he pointed out that mathematically, there were more radio stations in the country than TV stations. So why not try that? I wrote and recorded some radio tracks for sportscasting and for DJing, which I sent to stations around the country. And that worked. I got my first job at a heavy metal radio station in Corpus Christi, Texas.
We rock because you rock. Z101 rocks.
C101, baby.
Hurricane Hannah.
Yeah.
And actually, that's where the name Hannah Storm came from, too.
Right.
Right. They renamed you to Hannah Storm because the storm's blowing in by the sea at C101. Corpus Christi, yeah. Rock and roll.
C101. Our station was licensed in farm country. The studio itself was actually in the middle of a pasture, and there were so many cows in the area that every night on my way in for my 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. shift, I had to shoo them away in order to get inside. The station was a little concrete bunker under the shadow of a transmitter tower. When the station went down occasionally, I had to crank it up by hand. And while I love sports, that wasn't what I was there for. I was the station's newest DJ, and that was the headbanger era. I played Def Leppard, Black Sabbath, The Scorpions, Motley Crue, and Quiet Riot back to back to back. Hannah Storin is my given name. Not very rock and roll, or according to my boss, easy to remember. And there were hardly any Hannahs at the time. It wasn't a popular name. My boss wanted to change my name on air to Anna Storm. I didn't want to totally lose myself, so we reached a compromise. I could keep my first name. Thus, Hannah Storm. The Storm by the Sea, C101. You get the idea. And it just stuck. I guess it's worked for me all these years.
Hi, everybody. Hannah Storm back at Madison Square Garden along Rocket Central. My name is Hannah Storm. I'll be hosting the halftime and postgame shows for you.
I'm Hannah Storm, News 36 Sports.
From the NBA and iHeart podcast, this is NBA DNA with me, Hannah Storm. Episode 3, H-Town. After 6 months in Corpus Christi, I was still looking for a sports gig and still answering want ads. This time I found one in a publication called Radio and Records for a drive-time sports announcer and weekend DJ at a major Houston rock station, KSRR 97 Rock. I was tired of getting rejection letters, so I changed up my tactics. I drove to the radio station on my day off, camped out in the lobby, and when the program director left for lunch, I handed him my tape and resume. I was pretty terrified, but it worked. About a week later, I got the job.
That fuzzy sweater. Is that from the 80s?
Yes, it is from the 80s. I would have massive, I would have massive earrings on if I was really, really doing my job.
Me too. Mine would be dangling airplanes.
97 Rock is where I met one of my best friends, Judy Cohen.
We were the only girls. I mean girls, because we were young. There were people in sales and that kind of thing, but we were the cool ones.
We really bonded because it was all dudes and, you know, rock and rollers and stuff. And then there was you and I.
Exactly.
I was barely out of college. So we became friends, like really like kind of like sisters, to be perfectly honest. Why do you think we hit it off so quickly besides being completely outnumbered?
I just because our age and just we had a lot of the same things we liked. Really, really bad fashion taste.
There's that saying, the higher the hair, the closer to God. Yep, that was the reality in Houston in 1984. And you know, everything's bigger in Texas. Big hair, big earrings, big nails, big shoulder pads, and lots of leather.
North Beach leather, baby.
There was this store called North Beach Leather.
The shorter, the better.
Oh my gosh. Shorter, the better. Yeah. The glitter. So North Beach Leather had like wild leather suits, leather dresses, leather outfits. And we got them to give me my clothes for that season. And they were epic. It was like,
oh my gosh,
mini skirts, big shoulder pads, all the fringe. I mean, just
so
think
fun.
Texas, right?
Do you remember going to the grand opening of the Hard Rock Cafe?
I do.
So here's what I remember with that. Number one, Kenny Loggins performed. If that isn't just synonymous with the 1980s right there, right?
Oh, yeah.
You and I were Silver LaMay.
Of course we were Silver LaMay. I mean, it was either that, it was either something shiny or leather. Like there were two food groups of clothing.
I just remember it was like the craziest night because it was like, oh my God, the Hard Rock Cafe came to Houston, Texas. And
right.
Put us all on the map. People, exactly. All these people were there and then like sports people were there and, you know, all the radio station people were there. And we just walked in thinking we owned the joint.
And I guess we did sort of own the joint. 97 Rock, KSRR for kick-ass rock and roll, doesn't actually exist anymore. But in the early 80s, it was a Houston institution. I did sports reports in morning and afternoon drive, and we hosted tons of events with musicians and athletes. We were famous for our Friday beach parties in Galveston, Texas, broadcasting live to huge crowds in the summertime.
Colonel St. James was the disc jockey in the afternoon, so it was his beach party, if you will, on a Friday afternoon, and it was insane. People would line the streets and to get into the beach to get a free koozie. And they'd be throwing koozies everywhere, and you and Colonel were signing the koozies in some unmentionable areas of certain individuals.
Yeah, we signed a lot of body parts.
Yes, you did.
Yes, we did. Because people weren't wearing much.
Oh, my gosh. But it was like we would go down in the morning to set it up, and we have the vans down there, and just, God, it was like hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people all just crammed onto this beach, and they would just do anything to see you and Colonel. You would do your sports from there, and Colonel would, like, you know, play the music and whatever, and just the koozies and bumper stickers. Koozies and bumper stickers that we would throw out, and it would be like every Friday in the summer, every Friday.
On a much smaller scale, I occasionally convinced the station to send a band of one, me, to cover big sporting events like the Final Four or the Super Bowl. And Judy always tagged along with me back in the day. I would watch the games and then call in live updates from a payphone.
Well, you mentioned the Super Bowl. That's by far one of the best stories ever, just because we totally scammed our way into the game. I mean, you had two tickets. I don't even know how you had those two tickets.
From Warren Moon. Warren Moon gave me two tickets.
Warren Moon.
I remember because Warren Moon was like, okay, because we needed tickets. I mean, sure, the radio station was like, you can go cover the Super Bowl, but you don't have credential or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to get credentialed. So yeah, I got two tickets from Warren Moon.
But then we grabbed two friends and we had four of us. And
all from the radio station.
All from the radio station. So the year before you had gone to New Orleans and you're like, oh, it's so easy. You can just buy tickets right outside the stadium. Everyone's selling their tickets.
Right.
Well, I guess by the next year when it was Super Bowl 21, nobody was selling their tickets. It was at the Rose Bowl. And we were walking around and walking around. We gave our friends, Andrea and Jenny, the tickets. And they went in and then they lost us. Okay.
Right.
We had no tickets. We had no tickets. So we were trying to buy tickets and we see these two guys and we're like, hey, we gave our friends our tickets and they were supposed to like pass them through the fence to us. Well, we can't find them. You think you can do that so we can just get in? And they're like, sure.
I know. They literally passed their tickets that had been torn.
Yeah.
That's what they did back in the day. They tore the tickets through the fence.
Yeah. And said, please make sure you get them back to us.
Somehow, how did we get in with a torn ticket?
Sweet talked our way in. Who knows? I mean,
yeah. Isn't that funny?
And then we never found them.
If those guys are listening, Judy still has your tickets. And soon, I had multiple jobs. Finally getting on television by writing and reading the local sports calendar every Thursday on Home Sports Entertainment with Rockets announcer Bill Worrell. That morphed into a gig at Channel 20, which had the rights to both the Rockets and the Astros' road telecasts. I hosted pregame, halftime, and postgame, in addition to my radio shows.
Welcome to Rocket Central. My name is Hannah Storm. I'll be hosting the halftime and postgame shows for you. At the half, we'll have a special...
Hey, we got history, man. Remember our halftime shows back in the day?
Dale Robertson is a legendary sports writer in Houston who also happened to be my studio analyst. Why don't you tell people about our famous halftime shows, Dale?
Well, I'm not exactly sure how I ended up on them, but I was flattered to be there with you. You were still, shall we say, in your formative period as a broadcaster.
John Lucas had 16 points leading Houston. Hakeem Olajuwon with 14. Lewis Lloyd had 10.
We had fun. We did all the road games, or at least most of the road games, as I recall. This was probably mid-late 80s.
Here's Judy again. What do you remember about the Houston Rockets and covering the Rockets back in those days?
Well, first of all, the Robert Reed Show.
How could we forget the Robert Reed Show? So he was obviously a member of the Houston Rockets. And somebody had decided to produce a show, like a talk show with him, in a bar.
Off the Interstate 10.
Off of I-10. I mean, and it was a club.
Yeah, it was one of those just cheesy places that you knew nothing good was happening. Yeah, but it was really seedy. But it was awesome because there you were. And you were just, I knew then that you would not be doing the AM, PM radio sports thing for much longer because you were so in your element. It was just so awesome to watch. You know, you started gaining a lot of respect, not just from your bosses, but from like the players and stuff. Cause you would hang out at the Summit where the Rockets played. And that was always fun to tag along with you to go like see all these different people or whatever. But you were never fazed by it. You were never fazed by it. It was always just, you were in your element.
It's funny because I also really didn't love going in the locker room. You know, it was pretty overwhelming. I mean, here you are, you know, you're a young woman, there was a wonderful woman named Anita Martini who had been in Houston for a long time. It was really cool. So she was there. She was like the OG. But really, I was like vastly, vastly outnumbered. And, you know, I got like a lot of pushback and like even like in the press box, you know, just as a female, you're just stick out like a sore thumb. A lot of people aren't necessarily thrilled with you being there. And, you know, then you kind of multiply that. You go into a locker room, like a huge football locker room or whatever. So I never went in the locker room.
Yeah.
I would stand outside the locker room with my little microphone.
Yes.
And my tape recorder. And my tape recorder. And
exactly.
Ask the players as they were leaving to do an interview. The cool thing is you got a lot of one-on-one interviews that way.
We're this close to crowning an NBA champ. And with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5 and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code DKHOOPS. That's code DK Hoops for new customers to get a no sweat bet up to $1,500 if your first bet doesn't hit. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility, wagering, and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries, not so fast. Remember, your out-of-pocket costs are not covered by insurance. That can be a lot of money for your family. But how do you know you're not being overbilled? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claims for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors so you pay only what you owe. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
I still carry the torch for Houston because to me, H-Town has one of the best fan bases in America, not just because of Houston's successes, but also all those years of near misses that left their fans starving for a title.
In the early 1970s, it was almost a nobody town because all of our teams were dreadful. The Oilers were in the middle of having back-to-back 1-13 seasons. The Astros were 10 years into their history and had not even had a winning season yet. And then, of course, here were the Rockets. And I'm going to say that first team in 71-72 probably finished 15, 16 games under 500.
Rockets legend Rudy Tomjanovich, who would later coach the team, was a power forward at the time.
Basket in. They need one now. Tomjanovich puts it up on a hook, and he is after it out here today. And here is Newland with a steal.
He moved with the Rockets from San Diego to Houston.
Yeah, I was in my apartment ready to leave, and a bulletin came on, and it said, the San Diego Rockets have been sold to a group of people in Houston, Texas. You know, we came to town, and we found out that basketball wasn't a big deal. It was a football state. They had us out at a mall one day, me and a couple players, and they have a banner, Meet the Houston Rockets, and nobody recognizes us because we're brand new. We don't get to sign autographs. Finally, an elderly lady comes up and says, oh my God, I loved you guys. How do you fit in those spaceships? Eight, she thought we were seven, with NASA.
Six,
and we says, no, we're with the basketball seven, team. She thought, oh God.
Two.
You know.
One.
That is hilarious. Oh my gosh. So what were those like? What was that first season like? I mean, what do you remember? You said Houston was a football town. So were people showing up? What was it like?
Yeah, we had Tex Winter as our coach. And Tex wound up getting in the Hall of Fame and did so many wonderful things with the triangle offense. However, he was a college coach. He needed to make some adjustments. So we started the season 2-18, two wins and 18 losses. And we were blessed because one of those wins, the referee made a mistake on a goaltending and called it the wrong one. We got to win the game. But, you know, we battled that. And, you know, I think we won 30 games after that horrible start.
By the time I got to Houston, the team had turned a corner.
You know, the first years were tough. I can remember, you know, the revenues were not great. We had several owners who went bankrupt because there were other businesses that did well. I mean, Houston was a boom-bust, oil, wildcatting kind of a town. I remember one time we almost couldn't make payroll. My father was talking to the Knicks about selling Rudy Tomjanovich's contract to the Knicks to keep the franchise afloat.
That's Steve Patterson. When we met in 1984, he was working his way up the ranks of the Rockets front office. Like me, Steve grew up in basketball. His dad, Ray Patterson, was president of the Rockets at the time and the original president of the Milwaukee Bucks.
Kareem with a big pressure shot. Nothing but that again. I can't believe the way these.
He was investing in the team, and he was running a prep school called Wayland Academy in Wisconsin at the time. And both he and the school invested in the Bucks because they were going public. And Al McGuire was supposed to be the coach at GM. He was the head coach at Marquette University, very successful college coach. And at the last minute, the night before they were going to go public, the school wouldn't let him out of his contract. So the guys on the board looked around and said, well, there's only one guy here who knows anything about basketball. Ray, will you do it for a year? Because, yeah, I'll come do it for a year. So he kept both jobs, actually, for 2 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he was headmaster of the school and ran the Bucks for 2 years.
Let's go to the tip-off right now.
That's so crazy because at the time, my dad was with the ABA, yeah. And they tried really, really hard to get Lou Alcindor to come to the ABA. It was kind of a battle between the two leagues, but he ended up in Milwaukee.
Yeah. I mean, both teams actually were putting up money to get him to each league. And it was actually really interesting. I think it showed some of Kareem's character, because what he told both leagues was, make me your best offer.
There's some kind of crazy rumor that George Mikan had $1 million in his pocket, but he was so convinced that Kareem was coming to the ABA that he never gave it to him. I'm pretty sure. I don't know if that's true or not.
It was the first $1 million contract over 4 years. Now, of course, it's nothing.
And it's so crazy when you think how far the game has come that your dad was actually running a prep school and the Milwaukee Bucks at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, that blows my mind right there.
Yeah, I think there was only like 7 or 8 people in the front office. The marketing campaign was see the Bucks for a buck. Tells you a little bit about pricing tickets versus today.
Steve's dad, Big Ray, did not mess around. After drafting Lou Alcindor in 1969, he traded for Oscar Robertson in 1970. Milwaukee won its first title in 1971, and Ray left the next year to lead the Rockets in Houston. When did folks start to kind of warm up to the Rockets and warm up to the basketball scene?
Well, we made it to the playoffs, finally. We were playing the Knicks, and very close contest, and we weren't really experienced in that kind of competition, and we lost a close game, and our fans went crazy. We didn't really get good till Del Harris came in, and we actually wound up going to the finals with a losing record.
What was that playoff run like? Again, you guys just scooted in there at the very last second into the playoff picture, but then you kept winning as time went on. So kind of take me through that magical postseason.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I was on the team, but I had gotten hurt, and Del Harris went with Billy Paltz and Moses.
3 seconds on the shot clock, 2. Billy Paltz off balance. There's Malone again, and Malone has started fast.
And then Calvin and Mike Dunleavy, we would change the pace on people, grind it out. You know, we had to beat L.A. to get out of the West. And, you know, that was Magic when he was young.
He's open, and Magic blocked it beautifully.
And just remember seeing how uncomfortable they were. They couldn't get into showtime because we slowed it down so much, and we had 2 big guys protecting the basket.
The 80-81 Rockets team was stacked. They were led by Hall of Fame center Moses Malone, part of a monolithic starting five known league-wide as the Water Buffaloes.
I mean, they were not an agile bunch. Mike Newland and Calvin Murphy in the backcourt. And Jack Maron, you know, a couple of other big lugs. That was a different game. In those days, you could smack people. You can't do that anymore.
Yes, that was a whole different kind of basketball back in the day. And then the Rockets went to the NBA Finals in 81.
Yeah, a sub-500 team, 40-42. And we snuck in on the last day.
And then had this crazy run and made it all the way to play the Celtics for the championship. Yeah. What do you remember about that?
Moses just put the team on his back.
Moses Malone now with 14 of the 28 points.
What a phenomenal player. People sort of don't remember how great he was. But, I mean, that guy could go for 30 and 20 every night. And, you know, we had some young guys like Robert Reed, and we had Rudy and Mike Nolan and Murph. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. The Summit was rocking, and you know, the community then really started to kind of wake up and embrace the team as we went into the 80s from there.
That 80-81 Rockets squad lost to the Celtics and a young Larry Bird in six games. The Rockets came back and had another good run the next season, making the 81-82 Western Conference Finals. But they couldn't afford to keep Moses Malone, so they sent him to the Philadelphia 76ers for a few first-round draft picks, one of which was used to acquire Hall of Famer Ralph Sampson.
Sampson, double team on him. And he's 7'3" or whatever.
Ralph's arrival in Houston marked a new era. He was, as they say, a unicorn, the prototype for a guy like the Spurs' Victor Wembanyama.
Off the glass, no, Sampson. Great move inside.
What was it that the organization saw in Ralph to make him the number one pick? Was it pretty obvious?
Yeah, I mean, it's completely obvious. He was 7'4". He could play point guard, extremely talented, very athletic, hard worker, very professional.
Ralph Sampson, you know, we knew we were taking him. He was a super versatile player, had a great touch, could play with his back to the basket. He was so tall, it almost was a disadvantage, especially in driving situations. He could be exploited, but he was a rim protector. He was a phenomenal player.
And he dunks it home, and Sampson with his first bucket.
Ralph was soft-spoken and serious. He majored in rhetoric at the University of Virginia, where he was a three-time National Player of the Year. Ralph led the Hoos to the 1980 NIT Championship, the 1981 Final Four, and big regular season victories over the likes of North Carolina's Michael Jordan and Georgetown's Patrick Ewing. You were such an unusual player, right? At 7'4", but with interior and perimeter skills. Kind of take us back to how your game developed as a big man back in the day.
Ironically, I didn't like basketball when I was growing up. I played baseball, and I was a really good baseball player, and I pitched. I played basketball, but basketball at an early age was you can only score 16 points a game, and I had 16 points in the first 5 minutes. It was kind of crazy. But anyway, it evolved from that to high school, and my high school coach let me play at any position I wanted to if I practiced it.
Oh, wow.
So 6'7" in ninth grade, I was getting beat up. I was probably 100 pounds soaking wet. So he was very innovative in going to a weight room at that stage, which no one said that weights would mess your jump shot up or mess your throw up, right? So that was kind of there, but he was innovative. And he let me in practice every day against the fastest guard that we had. But it started with him making me do that in practice that evolved at an early age from high school to college to the NBA.
So you were running the floor like on a regular basis in practice against the guards?
Oh, absolutely.
That's wild.
Guarding and dribbling. He would have double team me as well because I would literally get frustrated because there was a boxing one or a zone and I couldn't get the ball. Somebody's in front of me, somebody's behind me. So I could never get the ball, only on a rebound. I get frustrated. I dribble up and I turn it over. And he was left-handed. He would stomp his foot. He called me Stick. He said, Stick, you can't do that. You're going to turn the ball over. So he said, he's going to do it every game regardless. So he put me in practice and the rest is history after that.
By the time he was a senior in high school, Ralph was the most sought-after recruit in the country. After his first season at UVA, he was being courted by the pros.
So imagine Red Auerbach and Mr. Fitzgerald, the owner of the Celtics, came and knocked on my parents' door with a briefcase that only had $1 million in it. So I see all these $100 bills. I always ask my parents, are we okay? Every year that I had the opportunity to come out of school, I would go back and say, are you all right? Do we need anything, et cetera? And my dad would say, and my mom would say, and we worked all these years. You know, it's your decision. We don't need anything because we have everything we want. And so with that in mind, I didn't need to come out. I just needed to develop my game more.
The Houston Rockets select Ralph Sampson, University of Virginia.
So you get drafted by the Houston Rockets. What kind of situation do you walk into there in Houston? And what was Houston like as a basketball town at the time?
Houston was massive. And then the biggest thing there that I remember, recall, is that I got drafted, but we moved New York on two private Learjets. We get there, we land, and we go to the arena. The arena's packed with people in the Summit. So that was like a special moment for me, like, oh, this is real, right? And now we are coming to really be the earmarked guys on the team that's going to hopefully get this to another level.
Ralph's rookie year, 1983-84. He averaged 21 points, 11 rebounds, and 2 blocks a game, and earned Rookie of the Year and All-Star honors. The team was bad, though. The Rockets lucked into the first pick again. They had a 20-53 record and then won the draft lottery coin flip. Here's Steve Patterson.
For some strange reason, my father got accused of tanking the year, which was totally the truth, because we had Elijah, we had Akeem Olajuwon played right there in town at the University of Houston. So like Elvin Hayes came back to the team after playing in Washington, winning a championship there, and I think he was about, I don't know, 68 years old or something at the time. The last game of the year, so that we could lose, they played him 50 minutes, including into overtime.
No. Oh, my gosh.
He was so tired, he couldn't hardly move.
The Houston Rockets select Akeem Olajuwon of the University of Houston.
It is official. The well-attired Akeem Olajuwon, who started playing basketball just 5 years ago from Nigeria, is now the number one pick. He does not have to go too far from the university.
People would say, well, you should take him Jordan or somebody else. You could not take Olajuwon with the first pick in the draft. You know, Ray and the rest of us would have been run out of town on the rail.
Then the Rockets did something which really could have been considered unconventional at the time. You already have Ralph Sampson. And then you draft Akeem Olajuwon.
Yeah.
Obviously, Akeem Olajuwon was a huge local favorite, you know, University of Houston star, already formed. And you're sitting right there with the number one pick. Nonetheless, you know, not everybody would put two guys that size on the floor at the same time. So what was the thinking there?
It really was to do something very different. Two great talents. Ralph liked to play away from the basket a bit, and Olajuwon was great down on the block, and great shot blockers. The guys that played with him used to laugh and say, "Yeah, go on down the lane and see what happens," right? Because the ball's coming back out to me, and I'm going to have a fast break and score at the other end. And it really, for a while, changed how the league played. You know, the Celtics were built that way with bigs, with Parrish and McHale and Walton. The Knicks tried to do that with Cartwright and Ewing. You know, so people tried to emulate it. It just made you so tough on defense, people couldn't get to the rim.
What a shot that was. Under total control, Olajuwon, 18 for Akeem.
Akeem the Dream was already a legend in Houston. He and Clyde Drexler, who would later join him on the Rockets, led the University of Houston to 3 consecutive Final Fours, the famed Phi Slamma Jamma. Can you describe for people, you know, what had happened, obviously, at the University of Houston with Phi Slamma Jamma, and how big a deal it was to keep Akeem Olajuwon in Houston?
Yeah. I mean, he had a great career there, played with Drexler and Larry Nishaw and Rob Williams and a bunch of guys that played in the NBA. Very successful collegiate team. You know, wound up losing a national championship game on a fluke air ball shot that got the Beck in. But that was so huge that they called him the Fly Slamma Jamma fraternity.
We're this close to crowning an NBA champ. And with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5 and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code DKHOOPS. That's code DK Hoops for new customers to get a no sweat bet up to $1,500 if your first bet doesn't hit. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility, wagering, and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries. Not so fast. Remember, your out-of-pocket costs are not covered by insurance. That can be a lot of money for your family. But how do you know you're not being overbilled? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claims for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors so you pay only what you owe. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hakeem doubled quickly by Bird. Finds a way and scores. That was just amazing.
It was easy to root for Hakeem. He immigrated to the United States from Nigeria as a college student. He was a devout Muslim, a gentle soul in many ways, but extremely competitive and insanely talented.
Nice turnaround move by Olajuwon. Is he quick for a big man?
Well, he's got that quick drop step.
Olajuwon, great shot blocker, defensive player of the year a number of times, always on the all-defensive team, great scorer down the block. Played soccer as a kid, so his footwork was real different. It's kind of interesting to watch him that way. You know, just continue to grow as a player year after year after year, playing at Pondy Rec, playing against Moses Malone every day, really learned the craft and, you know, became one of the all-time greats.
Inside to Olajuwon. He fakes Wilkins up. Sampson collapses inside. That basket will count and he's fouled. And the Twin Towers of Texas now have
Hakeem and Ralph. 2 7-footers. They quickly became known as the Twin Towers. You're there as a big man, and then they draft Hakeem Olajuwon, and all of a sudden the Twin Towers are born. But that kind of changes everything. You know, what was that like?
I tell people all the time, so, you know, think about Patrick Ewing going to the Knicks, Kareem in L.A., Worthy in L.A., Magic in L.A., Bird in Boston. So the NBA is a big business. And so, you know, you got to get the players in the right position to develop it. And back then, the NBA was struggling a little bit in their late 70s just to make sure it worked. So whoever made those draft picks or whoever was behind pushing those buttons did a really good thing within the structure of the NBA. But for me, they came to me and said, we're going to draft Hakeem and create this Twin Tower thing. They showed me a picture that said, cool, I can go and not be in the post and get beat up. But I thought that when I saw him play in Houston, and going to the Final Four and just seeing play, he was very raw. You know, the Dream Shake and all that wasn't created at that point in time. It became one of those things where, okay, we could get him in. Then Moses Malone sent me down and said, you know, he could be really good. Because Moses really taught Hakeem early on. And so I respected Moses because he was from Virginia. We had that kind of camaraderie. So I cherished the idea of them drafting me and creating the Twin Towers because it's something different in the league, 2 7-footers that could play. So I cherished it and I took it, you know, as something special.
The Twin Towers had a strong supporting cast. Rodney McRae, Robert Reed, Lewis Lloyd, John Lucas, the point guard, the piece that made the other pieces fit. But the team lost Lucas at midseason, sending him to rehab to fight a cocaine addiction. With no true point guard, the team ran their offense through Reed. After winning the Midwest Division with a 51-31 record, they bulldozed their way to the Western Conference Finals against Magic and Kareem's Lakers.
Here comes the Magic Man once more.
And one man really can't stop him.
After dropping Game 1, the Rockets reeled off three straight wins. Game 5 looked like it might go the other way when Hakeem Olajuwon was ejected for fighting after being baited by Mitch Kupchak.
Kupchak figured out how to get in a fight with him. So they both got tossed. So Hakeem's in the locker room with Rudy. And yeah, 1 second left. I think it was Byron Scott had missed the shot. And we get the rebound with a second. And we tossed it in. And Ralph and I was like, he's really an athletic guy, particularly for his size. But, you know, in practice, he used to play games just like, you know, like playing horse and make funny shots. And there was one play that Denver had, and they'd used it in the series before, where they throw the ball into Rasmussen at the free throw line, and he turns and shoots quickly. So Ralph had sort of imitated that in practice. And so, yeah, ball gets lobbed in quickly because we didn't want the Lakers to get their defense set. And throw it in. Ralph just in midair turns and throws it up, and it bounces around, and Wiggins almost touches it. You can see him pull his hand back.
Inbound, 1 second on the clock. Sampson. It goes! It's over!
And it bounces around and falls in, and we knock off the Lakers in game 5.
I was there. Covering it like for my radio station. For some reason, I don't even know why they sent me all the way to do that, but they did. And that was my first experience being in an arena where it's just totally silent, you know, where yes. You see that huge, huge shot. The complete silence in the LA Forum at the time was absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
It was a really cool moment. Can you just describe the scene in Houston? I mean, Houston just, went insane. But can you kind of describe what it was like after you guys beat the Lakers and before you went to the finals? Just sort of the reaction of the town.
Well, I started in the Forum. We're like, okay, we got to go back. And, you know, all the reporters and everybody like, okay, great. We're going back to the finals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when we land, it was just crazy. We go to the Summit and we got fans all over the place and interviews and any restaurant you want to go to. And we had to really focus on what we had to do. We could enjoy it for a couple of days, but Bill Fish got us refurbished very quickly because he knew what we was up against in Boston with the Boston Celtics and the fans as well. So he had prepared us really, really well for that.
After the Celtics grabbed a commanding 3-1 lead, the Rockets faced elimination at the Summit in Houston. The game intensity was at a fever pitch.
Well, you know, they were up because they beat us the first two games. Then I come back to Houston and I said, my motto was, if you're going to beat us, but you're not going to beat us on our home court.
Now, you had the kind of infamous moment. I was there in the Summit. You and Jerry Shiesting got into it. And that was, you laugh now. What do you remember about that encounter?
Shiesting and Sampson. And now Dennis Johnson. And a melee is broken out here. Broken out, the benches have emptied, and they have brought police onto the floor.
I was having a pretty good first quarter because I was ready to play this and another. And lovely Danny Ainge and Jerry would come around to pick after I'm sitting down on Robert or somebody to get open. They would hit me in places that you don't want to know. And so I'm like, okay, great. If you do this one more time, and I was hyped up and ready to play, I probably had 15 points, 7 rebounds, some assists in the first quarter. Don't remember all the details, but once it broke out, it just took that level. After one more hit, I was like, okay, let me figure out. And then my emotions got carried away, and then we went to fighting with another. But the most memorable part about that, I looked up, and my two sisters were on the edge of the court.
Here's Steve Patterson.
The Celtics had a thing they did where they would take Shiesting, and he would pick whoever the free throw shooter was as they were going back down. Ralph felt that Jerry submarined him and tried to hurt him. And it's this kind of insane fight right in front of me because I'm sitting courtside. And it was a dirty play, in our view. And they had done it over and over and over again, repeatedly. And so, you know, it got out of hand. And I really thought the referee should have called something sooner. I remember turning around and screaming at David Stern. I had to go up and apologize to him a week later.
Wait, what did you scream at him? What did you say?
This is your effing fault, David, because you won't handle the referees. God. They won't take care of this game. But yeah, that was not very good.
At the bottom of the pile is.
Can I be honest? It was out of control. It was completely out of control. I mean, people were scattering away from the court. Like it was wild. And then the Rockets had to go up to Boston. And I remember the Boston newspapers, it was like headline news. It was Jerry Schiesting versus Ralph Sampson, and Ralph's a bully. And they're like quoting like Jerry Schiesting's mom. it really provided a lot of fodder for the Rockets as villains.
So you walk into the arena and out there, so they have this mummy or stuffed animal or stuffed whatever it was, person, and it was number 50 on it, and it was like hanging on a noose over the banner.
Oh, wow.
And Cedric, we talked about it all the time. I said, back in the day, they did that. So yeah, they hung me over the noose, whatever. And there's a picture of it somewhere online. You had to be very careful in Boston at that point in time because something could happen bad. Hmm. And then when they was winning, and we knew this when Bill Fisk called a timeout, which was very good on his part, right? Called timeout, got all the starters in the locker room because he knew they was from the court. But when we are in the locker room and we got all the court, so the memories there was crazy, but he knew what he needed to do at that point in time because we probably been fighting or somebody had been fighting on the court or something like that going on. But I commend Bill Fisk for that knowing because we didn't know what was going to happen.
The Boston fans were all over Ralph in game 6, and the Celtics won 114-97.
The Boston Celtics will have won their 41st straight home game. Who knew when they lost the
Yeah, it was a great young up-and-coming team, and we lost to the Celtics in 86. If we'd have had everybody, it would have been, I think, a different series. And, it would have been a different decade, really.
The next year was devastating, really, for the franchise. Here you are coming off the finals and the entire backcourt gets busted for drugs. I remember I was working at Channel 20 at the time and the news came down and it was just this complete disbelief because it wasn't just one player. It was the top three guards on the team.
Yeah, we had lost Lucas. He went into rehab. Mitchell Wiggins and Lewis Lloyd were different. Lewis Lloyd always showed up for practice, always showed up for the plane, always showed up for the bus, never had an issue. And Wiggins, after his first year as a rookie, he was the same way. The league had issues with players and using drugs, particularly too much coke. They decided they wanted to crack down on it. With Mitch and Lou, they were the first guys that really got tagged by the league. And I think they were treated differently than the Orlando Woolridges or others who came later, who were confronted and allowed to turn themselves in and could go through rehab and come back versus being confronted with the proposition of you either take the test, if you pass it, you're okay, if you flunk, you're out for life, and if you don't take the test, you're out for life. You know, so there are many in the organization that felt that wasn't fair, and I share that position. I do think it sent a message to the rest of the players in the league, but Wiggins wanted to turn himself in, and the league wouldn't let him. I was there in the room with him.
I didn't realize that.
He tried to turn himself in.
Sampson and Akeem were so good that even missing their entire backcourt, the Rockets remained contenders. But in February, Ralph seriously injured his knee. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you were supposed to be out 6 weeks, right? But you kind of rushed back because you wanted to be back for your team for the playoffs.
Right.
What? Take me through that decision and what the implications of that decision were.
I had a really bad fall in Boston at a regular season game, and I fell on my left hip. I went to UVA and took treatment at that point in time because I wanted to get back. I felt they were the best that I knew and trusted at that point in time. So I came back real early from that. And I don't think my leg had ever bounced back totally. And so we play, and I'm guarding Bill Hanslick. I remember the whole scenario, right? And he's trying to go back door, and I twisted my leg, and I hear a pop. And then I go in the locker room. I had a bucket handle tear on my meniscus. If I'd known what I know now, I would have stayed out the whole year. I would have just rested the whole year. I would have never came back. But I thought we could get back to the finals again, and you want to play. And back in the day, there was no sitting out games and load management. There was none of that, right? You just go play. One doctor wanted to sew it back together, but they didn't have the technology to have the day to sew it back together so it would rejuvenate itself. So he just took it out, so it became bone on bone. And, you know, me, I'm jumping and running, doing my thing, and still beating that meniscus to death. And then fragments come off, lodge in the joint, so you got to have multiple operations. So it's just a trajectory downhill. You're on the top of the world, right, at that point in time, and then all of a sudden the injury takes you out, which is the nature of the beast of the game, no matter who you play or who you are. But today's technology is totally different.
The Rockets finished third in the Midwest that year, going 42-20. They made it to the semifinals, where they ran into the Seattle Supersonics, losing in six.
The Rockets had their chances. They had more.
Yeah, we thought we had a nucleus of people. We felt that we had the opportunity to get back. All we needed was a point guard, but we could not get that point guard that we needed. I tore my meniscus, and we had some injuries. We had the makings of a great team. We just never kept it together, and I think that franchise didn't keep it together for whatever reason they did or didn't.
Steve Patterson took over as GM around that time. He traded Ralph to Golden State about 20 games into the 87-88 season, closing the book on the Twin Towers era.
He made a choice on knee surgery to go have his cartilage taken out instead of sewn back together. But you know, taking that cartilage out and the way his knees were formed just caused a really rapid decline in his career after that. And it's really unfortunate because you look at him in college and the first couple of years before he got injured, I mean, he was, you know, all rookie, all NBA, all-star team, you know, all the awards. He would have had a phenomenal career if he stayed healthy.
By 1991, Ralph was out of basketball completely, but leaving a legacy which earned him enshrinement into the National Basketball Hall of Fame.
Been watching this thing on TV every year with all the greats that play this game, and words can't really describe how I feel.
Do you have a favorite memory of playing with the Rockets, or what would you consider the high point of that era?
Yeah, I mean, there's the great games that we played in for sure. And, you know, when me and the King would see eye to eye and we said, okay, big fella, let's go. And me, he was ready to play. I was ready to play. We said, okay, what door are we running this team out of?
Sampson down the middle, 10-foot bank, no good. Rebound is off. Magic wants it, but it's taken by Elijah Wan. He scores it.
So we had that camaraderie. We had the camaraderie when we played Kareem. So King would play him underneath and I would try to block his shot over the top. But we had a great 1-2 combination that is still special for me today. I'll show him as well.
I mean, you're such a smart and thoughtful person. How have you kind of come to terms with the fact that, you know, it was really injuries really shortened, you know, what you might have been able to do in the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, I've had those my first couple of years out in the NBA. I was like, okay, I wish I could have done this. I could have stayed longer, played longer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then you like realize it's the nature of the beast. And then what can you do after the fact? You know, what can you do now? Because you can't go back and change anything. You would if you could, but you can't change anything. So having the ability to have friends like Robert Ball that stayed there for many, many years, became general manager, Rudy T, and the crew that you build those relationships with, it become very special. That's what you focus on at that point in time. You have no other choice but to figure it out. And so I take all that with a grain of salt, and I use the same work ethic and business now that I had when I played to try to be the best I can be after the career of basketball is over.
As for me, my time in Houston was wrapping up too. I still wanted a full-time TV sports job. And even though I loved Houston, I kept applying to openings all over the country, finally getting an opportunity to cover an expansion franchise in a new city.
That NBA feeling is coming to Charlotte, and it's nice to have our own team on the floor.
Next time on NBA DNA.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
It's over. The Hornets win the game at the buzzer. Listen to this crowd.
NBA DNA with Hannah Storm is a production of iHeart Podcasts, the NBA, and Brainstormin' Productions. The show is written and executive produced by me, Hannah Storm, along with Julia Weaver and Alex French. Our lead producer and showrunner is Julia Weaver. Our senior producers are Peter Cowder, Alex French, and Brandon Reese. Editing and sound design by Kirk Guerin and Julia Weaver. The show's executive producers are Carmen Belmont, Jason English, Sean Titone, Steve Weintraub, and Jason Weichelt.
High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at highthenumber5casino.com.
High Five Casino.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And...
Hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.